every single thing we do is a beautiful story about a place or a feeling, and it's visceral and it's transportive and it takes you there.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to another episode of The Safari. My name is Morty Singer, and today I'm joined with an absolute energy ball of my friend Nicole Eccles, who is the co-founder of Glasshouse Fragrances. And Glasshouse is an Australian brand. It is a household name in Australia. They sell so many candles and home fragrance products in Australia that it's absolutely ubiquitous. And she's American. She's a New Yorker. She moved back to the United States from Australia very recently in the last year to set up the American arm of her business and is launching in Neiman Marcus and Bloomingdale's, among other wonderful specialty stores. And she is just this incredible combination of creativity and business savvy with just a huge smile and an infectious personality, and really is at the forefront of driving global brand into the United States and around the world. And I find it to be inspirational. Stick around and listen to what she has to say. Nicole, thank you for joining me on The Safari. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. It's lovely to be here with you, Morty.
You know, in this dreary day that we have before us, but this has, you know, opened up my eyes to a more sunnier complexion. It's nice to see you. No one else can see you, but I can, and that's a joy for me today. So, you know, as we jump into this, you are very well known to me, but maybe not as well known to some of the American listeners, specifically to this podcast and those in Europe. You are a household name in Australia, and Glasshouse Fragrances is sort of unbelievable in its sort of power and its ability to command such a presence in Australia. And in the last few years, you have come to the United States and already have been taking it by storm, which is such a wonderful thing to see. And so tell us a little bit about how you, because you're American, you're not Australian. You sometimes sound Australian, but I know you're American. You're a New Yorker even, I think. So tell us about your journey to Australia and building this business, and now you're back and you are in America and you're taking it by storm. So give us the backstory.
Well, Glasshouse Fragrances is as Australian American as you get, because the brand was conceived here in the States for a gap in the States that I still think is present. And when I went to Australia for a job opportunity, I actually started the company there. And it just so happened that the gap that I saw here in the US resonated with that consumer and that audience in Australia. And it just took off. And I think that's because...
How long ago was that?
That was in 2006, so 15 years ago. And I think it's really interesting from a business point of view, because it was the category that really made us skyrocket in that market. When I had this idea to make this beautiful fragrance brand where you could, a destination, a brand you could go to where you could get anything you want fragrance, whether it's for your body, whether it's for your home. And I found that the brands that were in that space in the States weren't really doing it well. And I thought, I'm going to do that. And when I got to Australia, I went to the store to buy a scented candle, as you do. And I went to their biggest department store. There was only two there. And I went to David Jones, which is their premium store. It's kind of like a blend of Neiman Marcus and Saks. And I went into the store and they had no candles whatsoever. They actually had one and it was in cellophane. It was all wrapped up. And I had the sales associate take the cello off. And that was difficult because she didn't want to. And it didn't smell. And I thought, my God, this is finally an opportunity, because I've always been this burning entrepreneur waiting for an opening. And I said, this is it. And what I did first was create a candle in that market. And I did it in my kitchen, trying to create the world's best candle in the planet, and created a category. So we were the first, and we absolutely dominate and own that category in Australia.
And so Australia, I think it's important to underscore the power of brand, but also, you know, I'm a big believer that brands have a nationality and a soul and a spirit that comes and is imbued into the brand by their country. Indeed, sometimes a city specifically, but I think it's really the halo of the country. And we know how the French and the Italians and the Brits and even the Americans do a very good job at pushing that. I think that while the brands that we've always grown up with, whether they be from Milan, Paris, or New York, I think people will always love those brands and they will always go to them because there's such an amazing heritage in them. But I do think that the younger customer, not just the younger customer, actually, many, many customers are seeking a new way of life, a new culture to affix to their own, because the world is so small today that you can adopt. Some people don't like the term adopting someone else's culture, but many consumers actually do. That's why they buy brands. And I think that this notion of brands that are more LA-based, California culture, even Montreal, like sort of a friendlier culture from Canada, and indeed, yes, Australia. I think Australian brands have been, you know, taking the world by storm in recent years. And talk to me about, you know, the Australian culture and how it has really, you know, become a consumer brand, a powerhouse, and how there are many brands coming out of Australia. Indeed, so are you.
Well, I think Australia has, especially for most of the world and Americans, this really mysterious sort of, you know, idea about it. When you think of the country, long are the gone are the days of, you know, Crocodile Dundee, where we see, you know, brown dirt and dust balls and Crocs. It's not. We know now that there's a lot more to Australia, and there's this beachy side of it and this beautiful, diverse. I mean, the continent is nearly the same size as the continent of the US, and yet only about a quarter of it is even inhabited. So it's just really fascinating as a country. And I'll say two things about our brand specifically. There are two main attributes that come from that beautiful place. The first is the culture of the people. I have never been anywhere in the world where people are more well-traveled. Australians yeah. go everywhere. And it doesn't matter if they're blue collar and they make $40,000 a year, they find a way to travel. I was introduced to this idea of, you know, the gap year. And I thought, wow, isn't that a great idea? By being in Australia. And the idea is when a child graduates from high school, and the Europeans do this as well, they take a year off and they just travel the world, and then they come back and they sort of decide then what they're going to study, or maybe it's clearer for them. And I thought, isn't that incredible? But that is the fabric of the Australian, the way that they're raised, the way that they're taught. And so they have this incredible passion and desire to go everywhere. And that's reflected in the stories and the way that we conceive and concept the fragrances. And every single thing we do is a beautiful story about a place or a feeling, and it's visceral, and it's transportive, and it takes you there. And Australians really, really love that. And then the other side of it is the quality. You know, the Australian work ethic, their attention to detail, the way that they care so much about creating something. Because for many years, you know, it was the manufacturing in Australia wasn't really great. A lot of people depended on Asia and different parts of the world to get goods. And now there's this sort of this idea of Australian made, and people really lean into that. So those are the sort of two things that really come through Glasshouse Fragrances.
So there you are talking about Australia, and you are native New Yorker?
I'm a native New Yorker. Yes.
Right. Okay. So here we go. I was very struck by a fragrance of yours called, I think it's called I'm Taking Manhattan. Is that right?
I'll Take Manhattan.
I'll Take Manhattan. Right. So here she is. She's back, baby. And she's going to take Manhattan and the rest of the United States by storm. So talk to us about your upbringing and your business upbringing before you went to Australia, which sort of gave you this view of the world. Because we'll get to packaging and branding later, because you're an absolute master at that. But where did you learn all this stuff? How did you become able to create so beautifully?
I come from a humble background. I went to a state school, so it really wasn't anything like that. It was just the fact that I am, as a consumer, so passionate about fragrance. I believe that it is one of the most powerful things of all, and your sense of smell really is fundamental to transport you, to make you feel any way you want to feel, whether it's better, whether it's a different mood. And it's a lot like fashion. And I've always been really obsessed with it and always interested in the beauty industry. And after college, I worked in Saks Fifth Avenue. I was the makeup artist, the resident for Chanel. And I discovered that I had the most incredible olfactory. And I was able, and my memory, my olfactive memory is astounding. And if I do say so myself, Marnie, but I can say, we're talking about the origin, so I have to go there. And it only got better as I started to work in that industry. And then especially when I founded Glasshouse Fragrances, because I had to smell everything and all these materials. And it just, it's always been an incredible passion of mine. So I don't think about, oh, if I make this, then this is worth this amount of money. And I don't think like that. All I think about is, how do I create the most exquisite product and a range of fragrances that people love, like I love, and I'm obsessed with? That's all I think about. It's my single focus. And nowadays it's all about, how do I take someone and show them something else? Just push them a little bit, like a bridge, take them from where they are, from their sense of smell and what they love, and just show them something new and take them on that journey. I've been doing that for 15 years. When I think about our customers that are cult-like, they just do not leave the brand once they're in. They started off liking grapefruit, and now they're in oud and smoke and leather. And, you know, that's a journey that it didn't go from
it's a discovery journey
to leather overnight.
Yeah. That's amazing. And so, you know, I think that before we get to the Coming to America piece, unless someone listening to this podcast says, oh, cute, little candle company coming from Australia to America, try and communicate. And I know you're not going to want to talk numbers, but maybe there's some way of communicating just how big your business is in Australia. I find it remarkable. But you're kind of the major gorilla in this category in a whole country. Maybe punctuate that for me if you can.
There, if you meet any Australian, doesn't matter who it is, and say Glasshouse Fragrances, they will know the brand. And I think that's kind of the best way to articulate it. We are a household name. And it's interesting because we are also a luxury brand. We are not inexpensive. But Australia has really, you know, if you're 25 now, you grew up with these products and you grew up with these fragrances, and our Christmas scents are the scent of Christmas. That is what Christmas smells like. So we're part of the fabric, and there's a particular scent that everyone loves. They're called Ataha Affair, which is this beautiful caramel vanilla fragrance. We sell millions of that single SKU and in a 12-month period. So our penetration is not normal. It's not normal. Certainly it wouldn't be normal here. And there's really no comparative brand. I suppose Bath and Body Works would be something that people would understand in terms of penetration.
There's a lot of them. So you came here, to the United States. What has it been, like a year now? 2 years?
A year.
God. Anyway, yes. COVID time. It's a weird time. So yes, only a year, but it feels longer, I guess. And you came to set up the business and you are taking America by storm. So how's it going? And what are your plans?
It's going really well. I mean, I'm astonished, actually. I thought it was going to be a lot harder to secure our distribution network. We are, as a premium brand, we're going after, obviously, partnerships with retailers that are like-minded. So we have secured a relationship with Bloomingdale's. We'll be launching there maybe end of March, April. Neiman Marcus was first, and they're launching next month. We have about 120 beautiful independent retailers across the country that are either apothecaries or beautiful gift and home stores. And that's kind of how we like it. I think the main point is that consumers need to discover us. They need to try our products. Then once they do, presumably they'll love them, of course. And then tell their friends and then their friends. And that's a process, right? And it takes time. And I believe in that process. And that's what I'm focused on now is trial awareness. And I'm doing it through discovery. People want to discover. They don't want to be sold to. And particularly if they are an obsessive fragrance person like me. If that's the type of consumer you are, we are the brand for you. There is no other brand that you can go to.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you're the CEO of this mega company in Australia, and all of a sudden, it must be kind of refreshing in a way. You're kind of running a startup in New York, right?
It is. It's a startup, and it's so funny because I came out here with the intention of hiring a GM and setting up a team and going back, and then I thought, what am I doing? Like, this is my home. This is my home, and this I know this market better than anyone. I was trained here. And it's time for me to take that on. And you're right. It's like a startup all over again, but I love it. I love it. It's exciting. It's the part of the business I love most.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the safari. And so running a business, you know, there are many companies that obviously are multinationals, and you are now a multinational. You're the CEO of the company, and you're still running the business from here in Australia. And you go back, and of course, any tips and advice for people, you know, running businesses 12 hours, 30, how many hours away is Australia? I mean, it's upside down for you.
Well, in many ways, we're running on a 24-hour clock, because if I do a series of that emails or actions while I'm sleeping, they're happening. So you can be really efficient if you plan it properly. The problem is I work during the day in the US, and then I'm working at night on the Australian business. Mm. So I think the advice that I would give is I've really had to carve off an extra day. So I don't tend to work on Fridays. I don't work on Saturday and I don't work on Sunday, but the 4 days that I do work are packed. And when I say I don't work, you know what that means. Of course I work, but technically people aren't booking meetings in my schedule.
Yeah, except you're booking them. No one else is.
No, right? I'm booking them. And actually, I am working this Sunday because there was no other possible time to fit this meeting in. So I'm like, fine, I'll do it on Sunday.
So let's go to brand. So you, I'm struck by the packaging. And I'm also struck by the visual merchandising of how that packaging is used to create a space and indeed draw someone into saying, I just need to have one of those at home. And it's such a great giftable item. It feels festive. Even the packaging that's not meant to be festive, it just has this resonance to it. Talk about how you came up with the packaging, how you came up with all of the logo. I mean, there's so much detail in this brand. But then don't forget to talk about, you know, how it shows up at retail, because I think it really smacks you in the face at retail in a very pleasant way, of course. So it's a branding question, packaging and visual merchandising one.
So the brand is all about the transport of power and fragrance and how that makes you feel. And it is a wardrobe of options for you, or levers for you to utilize. And that's exciting. And so the packaging overall reflects that. But if you zoom in to any particular product or SKU, it's unobjectionable in a way because it's elegant and it's classic, but there's a twist to everything we do, this cheeky twist, whether it's something we say or the color or, you know, the artisanal way that we approach the packaging design when we do limited collections and the artists that we work with. There's always a twist, always. But it's still classic. It's still elegant. And that's really important. That's part of our DNA. And when it comes to, we're known for our rainbow. And that is hard to do. So when we first started.
Okay, unpack that a bit. What does that mean? We're known for our rainbow, for the listener.
So our packaging, when it's set up in store or merchandised, it is a bright rainbow. Bright. And it is not, it's arresting. It's, you notice it. You go, what's that? And especially if you love color and you love excitement and it draws you in, and then the customer goes straight to it. I mean, it's funny to watch. You could be in a store with multiple brands and they kind of all look the same. And then there's Glass House and you go, well, what's that? And that's strategic. You know, it was designed that way. And it's hard to do. It's actually very hard to do because getting the rainbow in the right order, the color saturation in the right way so that they complement each other perfectly and it's seamless, that's hard to do. Because if you think about it, when I'm designing, for example, I'm doing a beautiful strong tuberose, you don't want to put that in a package that doesn't seem to go with tuberose, like turquoise. Because they're like, wait a minute. Tuberose belongs in like pink or whatever. So you have to consider the name of the place, the fragrance itself, and then how it fits in the rainbow. And what we are today is sort of a slave to this rainbow assortment because I don't want to break that. Mm-hmm. So if we're rationalizing the range, taking something out to make way for something new, what comes out and what color is coming out, and therefore can that new fragrance, and it's so it's really hard.
Yeah, it's also an interesting segue as to how branding shows up in operations, because evidently you're going to have to say to a retailer, even a specialty store, look, if you're going to carry me, you've got to be able to display it a certain way. And if you don't display it a certain way, then we just can't work together. Is that right?
Well, we do have brand guidelines, but we help customers with that. So we have a whole team of people that do VM, you know, visual merchandising guides. So for example, even with this partnership with Bloomingdale's and Neiman's, we didn't say to them, okay, pick whatever you want and figure out how to put it up. We said, no, this is what we recommend based on what people are loving. This is how it looks. Here is how it looks. Here's a photo of it put up. Here's a document that shows the name, how you put it up. So it's really easy for people, which is how, as you know, big beauty brands operate. It's the only way you can ensure that at least when you don't have control because you're not the retailer, you can get that, you know, that collaboration, cooperation with the retailer to make sure it looks great.
So you started with home fragrance, and but now you've added skincare, and you have indeed fragrance itself, perfume.
Yes.
What's next for the brand from a product assortment perspective, or are you kind of set right now?
Well, I set out to create a fragrance brand that was, like I said in the beginning, and really, when I look at what we've done, it's only been to realize that vision. And so we have Eau de Parfum, we have our body care, we have our home fragrance. I'm not ever going to go into skincare or things that promise benefits. We're the brand that doesn't promise anything. It just gives you pleasure. You're not waiting around for it to improve something or improve your skin or improve anything. It's just pleasure. And we'll stick with that and come out with and innovate around those concepts.
As a consumer, you talked a lot about how you built this business as an avid lover of all things consumer products. What are you seeing in the marketplace that's inspiring you, other brands, other things that are going on in other parts of the industry that have nothing to do with what you're doing? What gets you excited about those businesses, but also how are you feeling about the state of the consumer world now coming out of, we hope, this last weird 2 years that we've been living?
It's, you know, if I just focus on the last weird 2 years, you know, in one sense, it's been horrible, but in another sense, it's opened up potential collaborations with other retailers, maybe, or just in the space of retail itself. Is very exciting when you look at distribution and how to really bring this vision direct to the consumer. And I think in terms of my industry, for many years, we've been moving to this sort of genderless fragrance place. And my consumer base alone, it used to be about 75% female. And now I'd say it's probably more like 60%, and our male audience is growing. And I love the fact that things that used to be the fodder for female is opening up to another world. And that's very exciting to me because it impacts the creative, it impacts the fragrance. And that makes it interesting for me as a creator working with perfumers to come up with some really interesting things. So I'm pretty fascinated by that.
Well, you are an incredible creative. You're also a remarkable businesswoman, and you're an Australian American. You used that term before, who's going to take this country and many others by storm. And I think you're going to build, without question, one of the most important home fragrances businesses, or just fragrance businesses, ever made. And it's just a joy to talk to you about it and to be a tiny little blip on your journey as we watch you grow. And thank you so much for joining me on the safari.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.